This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Carrie Goldberg. Lean In, the controversial blockbuster by Facebook COO Sheryl Sandberg, came out in March, and it's been leading the New York Times bestseller list ever since. It's been called a new feminist manifesto that encourages women to lean in, meaning to try harder to self-promote and to lead.
And here's Sheryl Sandberg talking about this on 60 Minutes.
They start leaning back. They say, oh, I'm busy. I want to have a child one day. I could possibly, you know, take on any more. Or I'm still learning on my current job. Plenty of women are as ambitious as men. But I am saying, and I want to say it unequivocally and unapologetically, that the data is clear that when it comes to ambition to lead, men, boys outnumber girls and women.
Sandberg's manifesto has triggered a lot of pretty powerful backlash, particularly from people who argue that the main problem lies not with women themselves, but with the inflexible workplaces that were designed back in the Ozzie and Harriet era.
This is sure to be a long-running national conversation about the difficult balance between work and family. And with us today is another voice on the topic. Jody Detjen is a professor of management at Suffolk University and co-author of the new book, The Orange Line, subtitled A Woman's Guide to Integrating Career, Family, and Life. The Orange Line is not an antidote to Lean In, but it is an alternative. And Jody Detjen, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you, Carrie. Thank you, Anthony.
So let's start with the obvious question. What do you mean by the Orange Line?
So the Orange Line is an alternative to working. You have a career piece, you have a life and family piece, and then you have a piece for yourself. It's not all about career, and it's not all about family. It's about having it all, but not doing it all. It's about integrating. And it's a flow. It's back and forth. So for example, in the spring, when I was writing this book and I was finishing my semester and I was doing my consulting, it was all about career. And my family was sort of picking up the pieces. Or when one of our interviewees had a very sick child, she was focused on family. So it ebbs and flows. It's not all one or the other. It's not either or, it's and.
Got it. Listeners, what do you think? Can there be an orange line? Have you walked it? Is work-life balance possible for women or men? And if so, how? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Jody Detjen, just briefly, what are the personal stories behind this book of you and your co-authors?
Sure. So my story is, you know, I had a pretty traditional career for a college-educated person. Did all the right stuff. I'm in grad school and I get pregnant with my first son. So I say, okay, I'm going to work 3 days a week and it all worked great. And then I got pregnant with my second son. And my husband was traveling 5 days a week and I was, oh my God, how can I deal with this? It was too much. And it took me probably 5 or 6 years to really work my way out of it, to figure out what were the pieces that I wanted? What kind of life did I want? Kelly had a similar story where her trajectory was pretty high-powered, high-paced, and then her first son, she just took it into stride and went on. Her second child came and she opted out. And then she was like, oh my God, what's going on? And she was a little lost. So it took her some time to get herself out. Mm-hmm. And then Michelle, she had a different story because when her children were young, she had a childcare situation. So she was able to balance pretty easily. But then as she got older, she really focused in on her career quite large. But she got cancer. Mm-hmm. And she realized she was all about career and not about herself. So she had to figure out a different answer, too.
Interesting. So the orange line is kind of in between the green line, as you talk about it, which is like workaholism, basically.
Precisely.
It's throwing yourself
yep.
into your career. It's putting yourself at danger for burnout.
Right.
And the red line, which is essentially staying at home.
Right.
Right? So it's finding that in between.
All of it.
All of it. Except that you can't do it all.
You can do it all. You can't do it all, but you can have it all.
Or you can't do it all at once.
Or maybe you can.
Okay, we'll talk about that. Okay. Now, for this book, you interviewed 118 college-educated women
Correct.
For the Orange Line. What were your most surprising takeaways from those interviews? Give us some examples.
Sure. So the reason that we decided to interview women was because we couldn't figure out what were the levers of change. How do we get women into power? And as we heard all these stories, what we started to hear was that women were actually holding themselves back. They were saying things like, I have to wake up in the middle of the night and take care of the baby because my husband has a physical job, even though I work full-time too. Or I have to go have the corporate job because my husband has his own business and has to put all his time into that and he has no flexibility. Or he has no flexibility in his corporate job, so I have to have the flexible job. Or I can't get that promotion because I'm not 100% skilled. So there were all these ways that women were holding themselves back.
So that actually sounds very similar to Sheryl Sandberg. She's saying that women are not leaning in part because you call it the feminine filter. They're having these mistaken ideals about what they're supposed to be like. She calls it leaning out. But in what ways would you say that your message differs from Sheryl Sandberg?
Well, first off, I think with the Orange Line, we're really talking about people living a whole life and not just about leaning in purely to your career. So that's a big piece that we differ. But the second piece is, for example, she talks about women just have to accept guilt. And we disagree with that. We think the reason people have guilt is because they feel like they're breaking the rule. Mm-hmm. And the reason that women hold themselves back is because they're adhering to the ideal woman. And the ideal woman has three components. She does it all. Mm-hmm. She looks good. Mm-hmm. And she's very nice. And so when you're not one of those three, you feel guilty. So we think instead of feeling guilty, get down to the rule, reframe the rule, and then the guilt goes away.
That sounds lovely. But my big dispute with this idea is its focus on women being able to change themselves, that's the key to everything, rather than changing society, whether through workplace structure or public policy. So, and the problem is that many workplaces are just not flexible. They want 110% from everyone all the time. And this is an issue that's very close to my heart because I twice lost jobs, basically because I wanted to work part-time after having children.
Right.
So my sense is that it's more the workplace that needs to change than women. How do you respond to that?
So we agree that the workplace needs to change. We just think that the method of change is going to happen more likely if women make the change. So, for example, there was an article in the New York Times about getting a corner office. The woman wanted childcare. So what did she do? She asked her school, can you offer after school care? It changed. It changed for everybody, not just her. It offered it for everyone. Mm-hmm. Or another woman, she had four kids. And she, one of our interviewees, and she was working really, really hard and she couldn't quite do it. So she was thinking about opting out. But then her friends were telling her about this other company that actually was fantastic. And she was able to switch companies, continue to work full time and get it and have a full life and do everything that she wanted. So she made the change. She's the one that made it happen.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Interesting. Listeners, we're speaking with Jody Detjen, a professor of management at Suffolk University and co-author of the new book, The Orange Line, A Woman's Guide to Integrating Career, Family, and Life. What's your experience with the ever elusive work-life balance? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Jody Detjen, what about the critique that your discussion of work-life balance seems to be addressed mainly to highly educated and upwardly mobile women? What about poorer women with fewer choices?
Right. And we specifically chose our target market because our interest was how do we get more women in positions of power? And we felt that the women that were most likely poised to do that were women that were educated in with college degrees. So our theory is, our hypothesis is that it probably is true for different socioeconomic classes as well. But most of our interviewees were decidedly middle class. Mm-hmm. They were not the high Sheryl Sandberg flyers.
Okay. They were just the mainstream.
They were mainstream, even though they had college degrees.
Got it. Okay. Let's take some calls from listeners. Eric is calling from Chelmsford. Eric, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I called in because I'm familiar with the Lean In book. It's been in our bedroom for a long time.
How's that working for you?
Well, my wife and I are both pretty busy. The reason I called in is you were talking about different, you know, spousal roles and the choices that spouses have to make if they're both going to work to make life work. My wife has a more traditional career trajectory, and we made the decision that I would actually become sort of an independent consultant, start my own business, so that I could pick up the slack. But that has its own unique challenges, mostly because we're not the typical couple. You know, I'm doing all the cooking and, you know, taking care of certain things, which, you know, leads to challenges when it comes to like talking to people like our parents.
Right.
Jody, response.
So I think the most important thing that we heard in our data was that you need to find support. You need to find other people that have a similar experience to you so that you're not alone. Because I think when we're alone, it's like, oh God, what do I do? But when you have other supports, so I'll give you an example. When my kids entered elementary school, all I heard was, oh, well, my kid reads Harry Potter. And my kids, I have two boys, they're teenagers now. They didn't read until they were age 7. And so I was completely like, oh my God, my kids aren't smart enough. And I got caught up in this rat race and I felt like I wasn't a good enough mom and all that. And then I started talking to parents who didn't didn't believe any of that. And it was such a relief because I was able to get rid of the rule that my kids had to read at 5. And I was able to let them be who they were, and then I could be who I was. So I think one of the key things is to find the support of other people who are like you. And there's going to be people who don't get it, and sometimes they're in the older generation. And sometimes you just have to deal with that.
Mm-hmm. And actually, Eric, I would add in the, you should read, you should check out the most recent issue of The Atlantic. There is a writer named Stephen Marsh who argues that the central conflict of domestic life right now isn't between men versus women. It's the family against money. It's that feeling of how the hell are we going to make this happen? And he became sort of this, the primary caregiver, a slightly more secondary worker. And he's saying that the problem isn't who does what. The problem is that the load is unbearable on modern day families, given both members of the couple are usually working. And his main point is we need more social supports like affordable quality daycare. And that would help couples deal with these problems. Jody, how do you respond to that? That again, it's not so much the internal woman needing to change as the external society.
Well, that didn't show up in our data. I mean, what we really saw was that the women actually do need to shift their perspective because they were taking on far too much and doing too many things. For example, one woman had to have a perfect house until she realized it was ruining her marriage and her career. So she said, all right, I'm going to have a dirty house because my marriage and my career are more important. So there are things that women have to do. Do we need daycare, better daycare? Yes. Do we need full-time preschool and kindergarten? Yes. But how is that going to happen when more and more women say, hey, my career is as important as yours. When both spouses, even Eric says to his wife, my career is as important as yours. And then they start advocating for that. And then it'll change. Because just like in the 70s, when it changed and all the women went to work, as more and more people get into positions of power, it will change.
It seems to be happening very slowly, I have to say.
It is.
But yes, I can see that. Kate is calling from Arlington. Kate, you're on the air.
Hi. I'll be quick because I'm actually heading home to relieve my baby.
Appropriately enough, yes.
I just want to say that for the last 12 years, 11 or 12 years, I've really had the opportunity to have a lot of balance between work, life, home, and that's because my employer has worked with me in flex scheduling, right, and changing that flex schedule as my family's age has changed. It's been a true asset, but it's been because they've been supportive of it. So I feel like just a huge percentage of this burden is in the hands of the employers.
Well, it's interesting because what we heard in our data was that when women asked for it, they got it. So when they asked for time to go off for their children's basketball games in the afternoon, they were able to get it. One woman, for example, she was single. She was really burnt out, and she was working for a startup. And so she negotiated a 2-month sabbatical. And then when she came back, she renegotiated her workplace so that she could have a more integrated life. And she took her weekends off and she worked more reasonable hours so that she wouldn't get burnt out. So I think what we heard in our data was that women can ask. And as more women ask, then you get workplaces like you have, which are flexible and much more accommodating. Because what ends up happening is you stick around and you actually, it's such a good asset for the company because you're devoted to what you're doing. So I think it's fantastic that you did that, Kate.
But Jody, what if you have an employer who just says no, who says, you know what, if you can't hack this job, you better go somewhere else because there's lots of other people who want this job.
Right. And there are going to be employers like that. I think there are going to be employers. For example, some of the largest law firms out there have a very hours-centric culture. They're not going to change until they absolutely have to, until the incentives on their business change. But that's not what all of organizations are like. So sometimes we do have to quit the organization that we're in because they're not going to be flexible. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot more willing partners out there than we expect. And just by asking, we often get. In our data, every time a woman asked for something, she got it.
Every single time?
Every time. There wasn't a single time that they didn't get it. And here's the thing. And they weren't asking for huge things. They were asking for little things like, can I leave at 5 o'clock to go pick up my kids? But I'll give you an example. Some of it's about reframing it in the idea, in the viewpoint of the company.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So oftentimes when we look at what's part-time, we say, I need part-time because I need to be with my kids.
Right.
Well, what's in it for the employer? So, for example, I spoke with a woman last week, and she's working 3 days a week. Well, one day a week, she's missing a very critical meeting. And at that meeting, strategic decisions are being made, and she's not part of it.
It's problematic.
It's very problematic. So she's not adding value to that, and the company doesn't see her as visible because she's not there, that very important meeting. So she redid her flexibility so that she could be there. Sometimes she calls in, sometimes she shows up, some days she works that day. Mm-hmm. And now she's visible so that that part-time isn't damaging the company. Mm-hmm. It's actually a benefit to the company because she's very focused when she's there. But you got to be there when it's necessary to be there, not just when it suits you as a person.
But that's talking about juggling or rejiggering the puzzle of your schedule.
Absolutely.
But what about the zero-sum nature of the fact that workplaces generally want all of you and children generally want all of you?
Yep.
What do you do about that?
I think what you have to do is realize that that's an assumption. It's an assumption that workplaces want all of you, and it's an assumption that kids want all of you. What we found, like, for example, one of the women that we spoke with had six kids. Whoa. She has a career, and they span wide ages, but she has a career. So she was able to figure out a way to make it work for her workplace. She was able to figure out a way to make it for their kids. Was she there 100% of the time for both? No. Mm-hmm. But she was there when it matters. So it's about shifting the perspective from outcomes, from FaceTime.
From FaceTime to outcomes.
Yeah, sorry.
Words,
yes,
that's
from
that's
yeah. Off the FaceTime because that is actually not valuable. Let's get to the outcome orientation.
Yes.
And once we start doing that, then we do what's important.
Mm-hmm. Which is happening more and more in society anyway with more remote working and the technology
it's
that
we
have.
It's a 21st century workplace. We want people that can make decisions about what's important and where should I put my energy. Mm-hmm. Companies actually don't want somebody who's going to spend 10 hours on a project that takes two. Why would that be valuable?
Right.
Much more valuable to spend the 2 hours and get it done.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Tricia is calling from Cambridge. Tricia, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm just fascinated by this discussion I was just listening to. I work as a journalist for Associated Press Television in Rome. I have three teenage children and an Italian husband who does very little.
They're notorious.
And I started working after the second child part-time. I have two daughters out of three. My son is growing up to be a real Italian, so I'm more than American. I want to know what you suggest. I sort of grew up thinking I can do it all. I can be everything. I can work. But it's quite hard. And I think at almost age 50, I'm getting pretty tired.
Yeah.
But obviously, I'm not going to give up. What is the lesson that we need to teach to our daughters to really make it work for them so they can have it all?
Great question, Tricia.
Thank you, Tricia. I think for me, the most important thing that comes out of our research is that we are equal players at the table. That means whether we're at home, whether we're at work, and even in our own, the way we look at ourselves, our needs are important. And so everything that we do, we need to put that on the table and say, what is it that we need? What is it that is important for us? What is it important for the family? But we too often sacrifice ourselves. When we're talking to these women, so often the shoulders would come down and they would start to feel burdened. I was at a book club the other night and some of the stories, and I felt very heavy. But yet there was one woman who just went back to grad school, and she renegotiated with her husband about how they were going to manage the house. And now she's got this new career. And what I'm hearing from her is this openness, and it's this large, it's like her whole world has gotten bigger. And so there's more energy. Is she spending energy washing the dishes? Sometimes. But she's not spending all of her time worrying about washing the dishes. If she washes the dishes, she washes the dishes. But her life is so much bigger because she's actually put energy. Her career is as important as her husband's. And just that simple assumption, that simple principle changes everything.
So, Jody, a mother like Tricia then can model what she thinks her daughters can be doing for
Absolutely.
Them. What should she be saying to them?
Well, I think it depends on the situation. Can I use you as an example?
Yes. Yes.
So I was talking to Carrie before this, and she was talking about her daughter and how she wanted to. Carrie wants to make lunch for her daughter, but she wants her daughter to do it. So one of the things I think we can do is we can say, all right, the reason I want you to make lunch, your own lunch, is because it builds your responsibility and it frees me up. If I'm making your lunch, then I can't get to work on at this time, or I can't be doing this piece or whatever it is that we're trying to do. So it's more work for me, and I'm not teaching you. I'm not enabling you to be the person that I want. So the reason that I'm asking you to pack your lunch is so that you can be a better person, a stronger person, and a more capable person.
What I said at the time was, it's not fair.
Which is absolutely true, too.
Which is also true, yes.
That's also true.
Yes. Listeners, we have just a few more minutes with Jody Detjen, a professor of management at Suffolk University and co-author of the new book, The Orange Line, A Woman's Guide to Integrating Career, Family, and Life. If you have a question, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Jody, I'm interested in what you heard from these women at the book club who were sounding heavy. What was that? Just oppressed by everything they feel like they have to do?
Well, this is what we heard consistently in our interviews, is just as you hear the story, there's this brightness and this lightness when they talk early in their careers and how much they loved what their role was. And they loved the parenting piece too. But then as the burdens of the chores of parenting come on, women just feel like, oh, I have to do it all. And it's this rule, I have to do it all, starts showing up. I'm the one that's responsible for getting the kids here, there, and everywhere. I have to do all the doctor's appointments. So what we're saying is, even if you're a stay-at-home mom, get your husbands to share. Get your spouses to share. Get your husbands to take them to the doctors. And what I was at a conference in May, and these men who had been doing the shared care parenting were there, and they were talking about the relationships that they were building with their children. And they had tears in their eyes because they had such strong bonds with their kids because they were sharing parenting. Mm-hmm. And they were involved and they were doing the mundane stuff, not just the big glorified things, just the mundane stuff that you do every day. And they were happy. And this is what we have. This is what we can do. This is the vision of what we have to offer our children.
Yes. So that's a lovely vision. But let's talk about filthy lucre. Jennifer is calling from Braintree with a question about money. Jennifer, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. I was just wondering, you know, when you're talking about saying my career is as important to, you know, as my husband's, what if it's the case that your husband, I work in nonprofit and my husband doesn't, what if it's the case that your husband makes so much more money that you can't say my job is as valuable to my family as my husband's job is?
So what we would say is, why not? Why couldn't you say that?
Because if I quit my job, we'd be financially fine, but if he quit his job, we wouldn't.
So what we saw in our data was that oftentimes that's the way women visualize it, is either or. Like, if I quit my job, it won't matter. But what we're looking at is as a holistic piece. So my career is important because it's part of who I am and it's what I'm giving to the world. I mean, the work that you're doing is probably enormously valuable to the world. So the money is really just the way that you're actually allowing your family to operate. And what he's doing is probably enormously helpful to the world. But I find it very hard to believe. I do leadership. I do consulting. I find it very hard to believe when people say that as senior executive men are not capable of picking their kids up at 4 or 5 or whatever the time is. I don't find that to be true because a lot of the men that I know that are in these senior positions have more flexibility because they're in their senior positions. So if they leave at 3 o'clock, my husband does soccer coaching once a week. He has no problem getting out. You figure it out. So when we walk away from the rules, my job makes less, so therefore I have to take care of all the kids, to my career is as important as yours, we both have to take care of the children. How do we get that done? Then it's about a conversation, not about sitting ourselves into a box.
That makes sense, although it's tricky when you kind of have to attach a coefficient to the husband. In other words, the primary breadwinner's money is, in fact, much more important to the family than the secondary breadwinner's.
Yes, but the assumption is that because they're making more money, therefore they must have total freedom in the house. That's the thing we're saying. Mm. That's not necessarily true.
Right.
It's very rare when somebody who's making an enormous amount of money has no flexibility.
Right. Okay. I think we have time for one last question. Jody from Hamilton is on the line. Jody, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you. I was just commenting that I had heard a man named Tom Chappell, who started Toms of Maine, speak mm-hmm. a little bit ago, and he was talking about the ethics of companies and how they run their businesses and how important it was for him to have a company that was good for the employees, yeah. good for the consumer, good yeah. for the environment. He talked about flex time for the workers and, you know, leave for the fathers when their wives had a child.
Yep.
And I just, you know, you hear about companies all the time, their PE ratios, how, you know, what their profits are, but you never hear from the press about companies that have incredibly great work environments
right.
for employees. And I wonder if we did, whether it would incent more companies to run their businesses that way and have environments where mm-hmm. people could have a balanced, you know, work. And
yeah, I totally agree with you, Jody. By the way, hi, Jody. I totally agree with you. I think our workplaces can change fundamentally. I think when that's going to happen is when more of us who want to live this whole life are doing that work, and then it'll change.
That makes sense. And I'd be happy to highlight some of those companies, actually.
Cool.
Let me know about
Thank
them.
Thank you.
Jody Detjen is professor of management at Suffolk University, and she's co-author of the new book, The Orange Line, A Woman's Guide to Integrating Career, Family, and Life. Jody, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Carrie.
My head is spinning around still. Thank you. Listeners, stay with us. Coming up, he avoided being called to testify in the Whitey Bulger trial, but gangster Patrick Nee is featured in a new reality show about the crews that run the Boston underworld. I'm Carrie Goldberg with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.